Hello, this is Down the Back of the Seats. I'm Ellen, Cinema Manager of Campbelltown Picture House.
And I'm Alistair, a film and theatre maker based on the Isle of Mull, suffering from hay fever again.
And Alistair, what is this podcast about?
This podcast explores what happens when the public and public spaces meet. What's left behind? What's been found that's unexpected? What stories are there to tell? So it's tales from behind the scenes at the cinema, theatre, concert hall, maybe even the church one day, where people meet, linger, and leave things or bits.
Every time. We are
It's the Bits podcast. Hello.
We are going to start, as we usually do, with a frequently asked question. This frequently asked question comes from my dad. My dad would like to know how long the ads and trailers are going to be, because his ultimate aim is to leave his house, walk around the corner, nod cheerfully to the person at the kiosk, and go and sit in his seat, and then the film immediately starts.
Oh, sounds perfect. Yeah. Sounds ideal.
Now, he has a complaint about his local cinema, which is that they used to have the finish time of the film on the website, and then he was able to check the running time of the film. My dad's retired as well. You might get this from the amount of
time. Retired scientist.
Yes, a retired scientist. So check the time on IMDb, reverse engineer when to leave for the cinema, which is 30 seconds away from his house, and sit down. What my dad has failed to take into account is that the cinema will have approximated the length of the adverts, and they'll certainly put in either 15 minutes, 20 minutes or whatever on their timings. So you're never going to get an exact time. But ads and trailers, I mean, it's a fairly straightforward one. You probably know the answer to this, but the reason that we screen trailers is obvious, so you can see what's coming up. The reason that we screen ads is money.
To pay for the cinema.
To pay for the cinema. We use Pearl and Dean.
Pearl and Dean.
And Pearl and Dean is just a really easy way for cinema to make money. We do extremely little. We just sit there every week, and an ad pack arrives in our cinema and we stick it on the front of a film. And that's the end. We had that Leo from the cinema in rural Argyle was talking about putting the wrong trailers on the films, which is sort of a thing of the past now because it comes pre-prescribed. You just drop in the, you don't even have to do anything. It automatically syncs it up itself. So they take care of all of that. But, you know, back in the day, you could put, as was in his story, alcohol adverts on 15 films, and you can still come a cropper with trailers every so often, but I haven't done that for a while.
Bambi and RoboCop.
Ads and trailers, if you're going to a chain particularly, are getting quite silly. You can sit there for 35 minutes sometimes.
Well, I appreciate your dad's perspective on stepping into the cinema and it just starting straight away. Like, you know, that'd be really quite nice. But I do enjoy the ritual of cinema adverts and cinema trailers, seeing the trailers. Like, I remember the first time I saw the Lord of the Rings trailer in the screen. I didn't know it was due out, and I saw it. I was living in Paris at the time, and I remember seeing it and being like, oh my God, there's Middle Earth on screen. Oh my God, a book that meant so much to me. But things like, you know, the Juderman commercials for vodka, and they really were brilliant. Like, Juderman, I think you've seen it since we talked about it last, haven't you?
Yes, I have, yeah.
And what did you think?
Well, I loved it. I thought that I didn't remember it, and then I looked it up and immediately remembered it.
And it was, they were kind of like German expressionistic films in bright colours and odd angles. And then there was these, for Smirnoff Ice, there was this amazing action sequence advert that was really just thumping, and there was really like a proper Bond-style action movie, or not a big Arnie action movie, so it was really good fun to watch. And I thought that was so good to see that. And a lot of the times, advertising is where people gain their chops or get test out ideas and try different things. Like the filmmaker Jonathan Glazer, whose name I had to look up there, I'll be honest, who's behind such amazing films as Sexy Beast and Under the Skin, a film that I absolutely adore. It's one of the scariest, one of the most disturbing scenes I've ever seen in cinema is in that film. Have you seen Under the Skin at all?
Yeah, I have. Extraordinary.
It's a remarkable film. I love the way that it starts in oblique space and just kind of morphs with your imagination. It's like amazing. But anyway, Jonathan Glazer, he did a lot of incredible adverts as well, like the da-dum, 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 Guinness ones with the horses emerging out the...
Was that him?
So those kind of adverts, if you see the right adverts, they're absolutely awesome and they really grab you. You're like, oh, I really need a Guinness. I don't like Guinness. There was also, when I was growing up, the local adverts. And,
you know,
I used to love them because it was always said by someone in a recording office, presumably within Perlandine or some sub agency, that would advertise the local Indian restaurant and wouldn't know how to say, you know, the town. I mean, I come from rural Argyll, and we'd always hear, come to the Bombay restaurant in Dunoon. it was quite something. And it's like, oh, well, do we all live in Dunoon then? And I love that. And yeah, that ridiculous nature of that velvety voice advertising your local place that does poppadoms. It was great.
Yes. I suppose if you go to the cinema as frequently as Old Palmain would, then you get to see the ads 700 times and then it becomes rather tedious. Also, you've got to sit through an awful lot of dross to get to the Guinness horses or the Juddaman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I tend to...
Other forms of advertising are available. There's also perfume and cars.
But I understand the ritualistic element of it. I completely agree. And the old ads from St Albans, which sounds as though they were exactly the same as the old ads from Dunoon with the same guy sitting in an office.
Dunoon.
Dunoon. I don't think you can't go far wrong with St Albans, I don't think. I've got a quiz for you.
Ooh.
Again.
Ooh.
Same as last week. I'm going to give you the titles of some reviews from...
I'm going to guess straight away, is it about poo, Amita? And I'm just to have to. That's...
Yeah. Well, I've just looked at the first title and let's see where you go with this one. Pussy management.
Is it about wild animals coming into cinemas?
That's very, very good. Well done. Number two, pathetic, weak company.
Ooh, is that about a bit of politics here? Boris Johnson.
Hey.
Oh, sorry.
Ugh.
No, I don't know, actually. No, there's a different, yeah.
Third one, go woke, go broke.
Ah, so is it about programming selection? And
indeed,
censoring things within what people are like they can look at or not, or what they can see or not.
Yes, and the fourth one really brings that home, kowtowing to the woke mob. I'm wondering whether you remember a couple of years ago it would have been. Do you remember a film called Lady of Heaven?
No, you mentioned this to me a couple of days ago when we were doing a bit of prep, and I do not remember this movie at all, and I've since looked it up, and yeah, it's... What an interesting ethical field or otherwise it opens up. Really fascinating.
Yeah, it was selected to play across various cinema chains and then they pulled it. Now, I'd like to talk about that, but I'd like to very much not talk specifically about Lady of Heaven because we're both idiots.
Yes.
And neither of us are particularly equipped. But cinemas in general, I mean, what are your thoughts just in broad terms about venues either not programming something or programming it and then pulling it? There's a couple more things that I remembered. So there was The Interview.
All right.
And that was Sony itself that pulled that because...
Really?
Yeah, it was an odd... I'm going to completely mangle my memory of what it was. I was in New Zealand at the time and it was, we had it on the programming schedule and then we started getting weird emails from Sony that didn't make any sense. And it turned out Sony had been hacked because they were going to show this film, which was, it was just a comedy about North Korea. It was just a hilarious comedy about North Korea.
Team America World Police is very
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, yeah. And so they
eventually,
eventually Sony themselves pulled it because it was just getting too much. I do not know enough about the backstory to get into that, but that's a sort of, it's another example that I could think of a film getting pulled. So yeah, thoughts?
Really, really interesting. This opens up a whole area of censorship, basically. And censorship is a means of filtering. And it's a filtering from a perspective. And whose perspective is that filtered from? So the film that you mentioned earlier on, The Woman of Light, was it called?
Lady of Heaven.
Lady of Heaven, sorry, was pulled because of its controversial depictions of the life of the Prophet and other such things. It's not our place to say, neither of us being practicing Muslims, not really our place to say whether that, you know, that's one thing, a good thing or a bad thing, I think, but it's just what happened. But the question of placing a filter over people's viewing is really, really interesting. And censorship falls around the idea of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And you have to ask the question is, to whom does that apply? So one of the things that comes up with is obscenity. And, you know, defining obscenity, what is obscene, is a really interesting one. So there's a couple of things you never, I think culturally, across all cultures that I can think of, you wouldn't find acceptable to see on screen, which are death, real death of people or animals, and child pornography. Those are the things that are just not acceptable in any way, shape or form. So the BBFC, the British Board of Film Classification that we have here in the UK, they censor films in terms of age ranging, like, you know, what age they can be seen at and things like that. So we talked about film classification before, but there's also kind of censorship within that as well. And you have to ask, you know, why is that? So the personal example I have from my own family life is when I was younger, my auntie and uncle lived in Saudi Arabia, and they used to bring back pirate films galore. And quite often before, it was really exciting because I'd get to see films well in advance of when they were out in the cinema sometimes. I think I saw Terminator 2 quite a bit before it came out. It was like, woo, it was really great. And Patriot Games as well, and various different other things. And it was really thoughtful of my Uncle Mick to bring these back for me, which was really great. Whereas now, pirate cinema, you know, pirating kills cinema. We should say that. Back in the 1980s, it was great. And 90s. But, so yeah, being from Saudi Arabia, there were certain things in these films that were depicted, which, if you were following Islamic law, would be haram or completely forbidden, such as representations of sexuality, like actual physical sexuality, so exposure of breast bottoms and willies and bums and all that sort of stuff. And so these movies, they would occasionally have such moments in it, and whenever those came on, there was always a little robot appeared on the screen, and you could hear the sound in the background of or whatever, and you could see on the screen there was a little robot with it waving its arms around, like up and down like that, and there'd be a message in Arabic below saying haram or something like that, or, you know, forbidden. And that was like, wow, that's really, it was really different.
Amazing way to censor something. I love it.
It was kind of cool. So yeah, but it's a really, there's also the notion of self-censorship as well, because Clockwork Orange is a very interesting example around this. Do you know the story of Clockwork Orange at all?
I remember that it was banned. I remember that, yeah, it spent a long time, I think right into the 90s possibly.
It wasn't actually banned.
Ah, in that case, I've got the urban myth version.
But from what I remember, it was Kubrick himself who withdrew it.
Ah.
Because it was causing too much, there was too many responses to it that were just really awful. And he thought, nope, saw this and pulled it from the UK.
So, right.
Another example of censorship as well, which I think really, really interesting, and particularly of a very particular time in British cinema and British culture, was Life of Brian.
Yes.
Have you ever screened Life of Brian at all?
Yes.
Yes, you have. I've seen it at Picture House.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we did Life of Brian and Holy Grail. Yeah, we did Life of Brian as well. Yep.
Did you have any protests at all outside?
No.
But back in, you know, when it came out in the late 70s, there it was being protested. Yeah. massively so. And there were certain cinemas, certain council areas would not allow it to be screened as well. So censorship always places this notion of protecting people. But actually, who's protecting who and where's the lens? You know, who's, what's being protected from what? So it's very, very interesting. And if, again, going back into cinema history, you look at the Hays Code, which operated in America from 1934 to about 1968. This was a code that showed, you know, you couldn't show representations of sexuality on screen, but you had to find other ways to do things. So like a bedroom, if a married couple's bedroom always had to have two single beds in it. There was never a double bed. All that sort of stuff. And I saw a film at the weekend, which I'm very fond of, which was filmed here in Mull, called When Eight Bells Toll with Anthony Hopkins. It's a spy thriller from the period when Sean Connery had stepped down from Bond, and there was a gap in the market for a wee bit to say, like, what can we do to try and make a Bond style thriller? And so Alistair MacLean's novel When Eight Bells Toll was adapted by himself and by MacLean himself, and there was a film made of it with Anthony Hopkins that was filmed here, and there's a brilliant moment of of sexuality where he goes in for an embrace, and then the next shot is a repelling gun being fired with a sort of grappling hook on the end of it, and it's like, ooh, fruity. Yeah.
We have screened some older films at Campbelltown Picture House, which do have elements in them which you look at and you're a bit freak. No,
yeah,
that's it's mainly, you know, everything from the 80s basically, because it was you know, the 80s was
even Blazing Saddles is a hard watch in some ways.
Yeah, that's the one that I was thinking of, actually. So Blazing Saddles, and then there was a Christmas film that I screened because one of our customers was really excited to see it on the big screen. And I think I should have thought about it, but I didn't really think about it. I just programmed it. And then I was reading some of the bits and pieces about it, and there's a scene in it which is just, it's uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I continued to screen that film, and I continued to screen Blazing Saddles, but I'm not entirely sure where my line is or where my line should be, because as I mentioned before, I'm an idiot. I mean, what I tend to do is try to find somebody cleverer than me and then ape their opinion on all. That's just my general rule in life. and these films have been classified by the BBFC, and the BBFC do a wonderful job of pointing out things that need to take into consideration. As an independent cinema, I do have more scope to say, I'm not comfortable with the themes of this film, and therefore I'm not going to screen it.
It is such an interesting field. There's so much to say on it as well. And this notion of woke is really problematic as well, because it can be used in so many different, thrown in so many different ways as well.
Well, it's been thrown, it's been thrown in at me an awful lot from certain people, and I will pick up that badge of woke and I will wear it with pride, because I think essentially what somebody is saying to me when they say, God, you're so woke, is that, God, you just think about things so much and worry about whether you're doing the right thing too much.
I think that's precisely it. But I think there's a way of working with this that needs to, it's too, the woke badge is too easy to shut things down. It's just a term. I mean, life, we want life to be kind of fairly quick and swift, and, you know, but there are actually some things that are worth digging deeper into. And I'm really worried that a lot of this is maybe too heavy for the podcast, but I'm really worried that we are heading into an era of new Puritanism, and Puritanism is the worst thing possible, because it just leads to the repression of truly awful things, and those things going unnamed and being hidden away, like in Victorian times. And it just makes me really, really worried. And one of the really great examples of this is the Warner Brothers Looney Tunes cartoons. I'm a huge fan of Looney Tunes. I absolutely love them. I think you can learn so, so much from how these stories are constructed, both visually and in terms of their storytelling and character stuff. Everything is there. The music is incredible artwork. They're tight little studies, each different one. There's always something new and different to be found in each one of them. Even if they're repeating a theme, they're still exploring it a different way. But they are all from a specific period of time when representations of race particularly were not healthy at all for where we would want to be now. And when they were released on DVD, Whoopi Goldberg was out on the front of them. doing an introduction to these each DVD. There she is going, "So I am Whoopi Goldberg. These films come from a time, a long time ago, when attitudes to race were totally different to where we're at now. And I think it's important to say that because there's still a lot to like in them, but things change and people have changed and it's worth watching. But just bear in mind, this is not where we're at now. We're better than that." And I thought that was fantastic. Really, really good. So I think something like that would be really, you know, those kind of discussions around things, rather than just our next generation going, it's bad because that's just bad. That's not, I think we need to know why things are and have a bit more rigor around them rather than just switching things off.
So are you in the camp of contextualization is the way forward rather than censorship?
We're appropriate. We're appropriate. Mm. There's some things that are, I mean, this, and that's the difficulty of the argument, isn't it?
Yeah.
That it's not, it's a colour spectrum. I always think it's like when you, the clutch in a car, when you're changing, so your clutch is up, you're in a gear, your clutch is down, you're in neutral and you're able to change gear, and then you've got the biting point somewhere in the middle where there's the contention between those two gears, between neutral and that gear, sorry. And I think that's where a lot of moral discussions lie, is like a clutch like that as well. So where's the biting point to lead to the next great gear, which will hopefully lead us on a happier journey?
Mm. There was a fairly recent example of when a filmmaker used being banned as a way of promoting his film. Do you remember the Robert the Bruce film that was the pandemic? It was just getting some traction before the pandemic.
Angus McFadden?
Yeah. I'm worried that you know. Do you know Angus McFadden?
No idea. I remember him. I remember really hoping to see more of his career when he played the Bruce in Braveheart many years ago and thinking, oh, great, he's amazing. I really look forward to seeing what he does with his career. Never heard of him since, apart from that movie, which I've still
not
seen.
And then did you watch that movie?
No, I haven't. I've got it, but I've not watched it yet.
Mm. Well, so he so he was sort of putting it about, or allowing it to be thought, that the reason why Cineworld, I think it was, wasn't playing Robert the Bruce in Scotland was that it was because it was banned, because it would cause too much uprising. Because the Scots people, you know what you're like. You'll rise up.
Oh, yes.
And you'll...
You're one of us now as well.
I know, very proudly one of you. Of course, that wasn't the case at all. Cineworld had looked at it and thought this movie is a bit shit and decided not to play it. I mean, it turns out that was a mistake because it did have, anything local has pretty good traction anyway. But it did really well. The film did really, really well because it started, the ball started rolling. Oh, this film has been banned. And we booked it because it all started, people were starting to ask for it. Are you going to be able to get Robert the Bruce? And so I booked the film completely without incident because the film was not banned, and loads of people came to see it, and there were two comments on our Facebook like, oh, Ellen's managed to get this film that other cinemas are, it's being squashed because they don't want the Scots to see it. And it was just a sort of pretty average film that wasn't going to make enough money, but they played a blinder and
that's clever.
Got and it did really well for what it was. Emails.
Ah, yes.
Now, we're going to return to Leo in a cinema in Argyle. Have you got the email? It's the second part of the one you read last week.
So, first part was poop story.
Yes.
And this one, the second part is stuff I found. This is not as weird as a pile of skin, but toenails and fingernails were a common occurrence at the cinema where I worked. One night, after a particularly packed screening, I found a rather lovely handbag.
Standard. Nothing untoward so far.
I can't remember, but I assume it was a family movie, as anyone who's worked in the cinema knows that these are the messiest.
True. Anyway. He speaks the truth.
Back to the handbag. So it was lovely, real leather, and I'm told by the cashier that it was Marc Jacobs. Not the person who owned it, it was the brand. As the film had finished a while ago, no one had come back or called. I decided to open the bag to see if there was ID so I could contact them. It's a small town. Maybe I knew them. So I could return the bag to them without having to go to the police station.
Totally relate to that. We do the same.
I go into the bag, find a purse, and inside is a business card with a name and number. This matches all the bank and credit cards, so I assume it must be hers. I call and give her the good news that I found her handbag at the cinema and that we'll be there for another 45 minutes should she wish to collect it tonight. Stupidly, I'm expecting a thank you so much, I've been worried about it, and I'll be in as soon as possible to collect it. Instead, I'm given the third degree as to why I felt I had the right to violate her personal property, invade her privacy, and likely steal all of her valuable belongings in the process. Nice.
Now, I hope that that's just a stressed response.
Yeah. I did consider arguing the case that if that was the case, I would have been a most incompetent thief. But the screaming made me decide to advise them we could collect in the morning when the owner was in. 10 minutes later, the police arrived to retrieve the handbag. I advised them that I'd found the bag and had only opened it with the cashier as a witness. The police had a look inside. The contents included...
Oh, yes, please.
A lady's Rolex, believed genuine.
Woo.
A checkbook, all signed and blank. Several bank and credit cards, each with a four-digit number sellotaped on each of them. Several £100 in cash.
Oh, my God.
Passport and driving licence, various items of jewellery. The police took it away and advised she could collect it as soon as she provided suitable photographic ID. I did get a reward.
Oh,
a written letter of complaint to the boss several days later.
Oh, no. That's so harsh. There's something going on there, isn't there? That's not normal. That's not normal behaviour.
That's not normal. No, not at all.
Oh.
And a small derringer. A lady killing gun. A lady killer, as they're known. Yes. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. No, there's definitely something going on with that woman that she doesn't want someone looking in her bag and finding several £100 in cash.
It could have been a Russian spy because I'm sure there was a American base of some sort around that area.
Oh, yeah, spy. Yeah, definitely. That's what I'm going for. A Russian spy who really loved... Was it a kids' film? Oh, yeah. Really loves animation.
There was a movie, talking of military and naval bases in Argyll. There was a film shot at
White
Campbellton.
Knights. Are you thinking White of White Knights? Yeah.
Yes. Was that any good?
I haven't watched the whole thing. I have watched the bits that are in Campbelltown.
Yeah.
And it took me 45 seconds to watch the bits that are in Campbelltown. I think it's the airbase that's used, which is just outside the town. And I think the bit that's Campbelltown based is just a plane flying in to what could be a runway anywhere.
My late cousin Neil Brown is one of the extras in it.
Yeah,
so I got a copy to have a look at it, but my DVD copy just didn't work, and I've never located it since. So, but it was Mikhail Baryshnikov in Campbellton.
Oh, maybe there is more in Campbelltown then. Maybe I've got the wrong end of the stick there. I thought it was just because there weren't any extras in that bit.
Hmm.
Yes. Hmm. Oh, well, I shall probably not watch it.
So that's two films we're not watching this week. Robert and Bruce and indeed White Knights.
I'll tell you what else we're not watching is anything on screen too. Do you remember a few episodes ago I was saying one of the benefits of 35mm is you can just look at the projector and you can kind of see what's on, and you can't do that with digital. Yeah. Well, screen two I turned on yesterday morning and played something through it, and it was all fuzzy. It was as if it was being sort of projected through a veil of some kind. It was really weird. I've never seen that. So turned it off and on again. Classic.
Is it condensation or something?
Well, this is what lovely Will from Sound Associates, who look after our tech, this is what he was saying. But I don't think so, because it didn't clear gradually. So I turned it off and on again, and then it cleared, and it was played the content fine. And I did the same this morning. I went in and played a playlist through it, and it was fuzzy again. And then I stopped it and started it again, and then it was fine. But it stayed constant throughout the clip that I was playing. I've watched the Indiana Jones trailer 700 times now in screen two. So anyway, I don't know. But that's my point. So Will, lovely Will, has got all the logs from the projector, and he's looking at them and trying to figure out what is going on. But potentially condensation, and I haven't quite caught the point where it fades.
Yeah.
That would be embarrassing because Will's spending quite a lot of time scouring the Barco logs of my projector. I don't think it is. But next week we'll have a recap, we'll have an update where I say, yeah, it was condensation. Or I say, oh yeah, sorry, I was accidentally trying to project through a veil.
And with a ghost standing in front of the projector.
I forgot that I'd put Vaseline on the lens.
Exactly, on my own eyes.
Yes, yeah, I did confirm to Will that it wasn't me, that I could see other things, not fuzzy. Because that was also his question.
Yeah, these are close.
Bless him, they're so used to asking people really, like, stupid questions.
Have you switched it on and
off?
Yeah,
yeah, it's usually that. Mm. This time it was, have you pressed a macro button? I was like, no, I haven't pressed a macro button. Or are you showing 3D content through a 2D projector? That's another reason why it would look fuzzy. Definitely not doing that,
that's
though. Because listeners, any projectionists in our listenership are now going to have their theories. I promise you, I've tried all of them. And it comes back and it's fine.
Well, next week we'll find out more about this situation when you join us again for Down the Back of the Seats. But say you were wanting to send us an email with your own story of objects found or lost or projectionist horror or anything at all you wanted to send to us, how would you reach us, Ellen?
downthebackoftheseats@gmail.com, or we can be found on the various socials media at Down the Back of the Seats.
Thank you so much for listening. See you again soon. Thank you.